Session number 13149, Rule 1.
Mr. Best Schizo, Reel 1. Could you tell me whereabouts you were born, please?
I was born in Italy. Brato.
Where is that?
Brato, Massa Carrara. It's near Pontremoli.
Is that north or south?
North, Northitch. It's in Tuscany.
And you were telling me that was in 1918?
1918, yes.
Can you tell me something about your family background, what your father did for a living and so on?
Well, my father was a caterer. He came to England in 1907. He returned to Italy in 1915, serving the Italian army. He married my mother in 1916. And then he returned to England. My mother joined him in 1920, and I was left with my grandparents. In 1923, my first sister was born. In 1926, the younger one was born. My father brought me to England in November 1924.
Whereabouts was your home as a child?
As a child in England?
Yes.
Yes, we were in Shepherd's Bush, at Gold Hawk Road.
Did you go to school in
Shepherd's Bush? Yes, I went to school, St. Stephen's School in Rylett Road. And I went there, I suppose I was seven.
How old were you when you left school?
14. I just had the elementary education. 14.
And what job did you go into once you left?
What job? I went to work with my father's cafe.
In Shepherd's Bush?
In Shepherd's Bush, Gold Hawk Road. Yeah, we lived above the flat. And I worked there. And then my father opened another one in Hammersmith Broadway, and I alternated between working in one or the other. In 1939, war broke out. My father sent my mother and two sisters to Italy. We stayed there and worked in the restaurants.
Why did he send part of the family to Italy?
Well, because as soon as war broke out, everybody was expecting the bombs to drop. I mean, that was everybody's expectation. In fact, I can still remember the morning of the war declaration, the sirens went. I can remember that quite vividly. And my father said, they won't bomb our village, which is high up in the mountains. And he thought that my mother and sisters would be safer there rather than in London. We stayed on, and just before Christmas 39, he said, we're both going to Italy. And I said, no, I said, I'm not. I said, I'm staying here.
Why didn't you want to go?
Well, I wasn't particularly anxious to go. I liked England, I liked London. I mean, although I was born in Italy, to me there was no place like London. And not only that, I'd been with my family all these years, and in those days, even at 21, there were certain restrictions placed on me, and I thought this was a fine opportunity to spread my wings. So my father, he put two cousins in the business, the two businesses, on a profit-sharing basis. And I stayed, and I went to work for a friend of mine in Covent Garden. And I went to stay with him in Barking. He lived in Barking. And I stayed with the family. I mean, the family was very very friendly. In fact, my friend's brother was my uncle by marriage, so, you know, there was quite a family affair, if you like. And then on the 11th, on the 10th, war broke out with Italy. I don't think anybody was very pleased about it. I know none of my acquaintances were, or friends. So on the 11th, the morning of the 11th, two detectives came along and they took my friend and his father. They said, pack suitcases. And in fact, they were already packed because we knew that internment was going by the last war. So they said, right, come with me. And I said to them, I said, what about me? And in fact, the word I said, which was quite common in London those days, if you didn't get some, what am I, a bastard? You know, so more or less a joke. I said, no, we don't want you. Well, fair enough. On the 13th, about 7:30 in the morning, banged on the door. In came one detective, policeman, and he said, where have you been? He said, we've been looking for you all over London. I said, what do you mean? I said, you were here 2 days ago. Oh, he said, yes. He said, why aren't you in Gold Hawk Road? I said, I moved. So now, in those days, as an alien, when you moved address, you had to report the police station. And you had an identity book. In fact, I've still got my old identity book. And I said, yeah. I said, look. Oh, it's all right. He said, have you had breakfast? I said, no. I said, well, I've only just got up. Anyway, my friend's sister was still there. And he said, all right. He said, pack your bag. He said, have your breakfast. He said, I'll be back in half an hour. Now, I thought that was good. So, all right, so I had eggs. She cooked me eggs and bacon, and I had them. We came along. Then we were taken to, I think, Plaistow Police Station. I was put in a cell there for 2 or 3 hours. Then a Black Mariah came, took me and others to Kensington, the Oratory. Brompton Oratory. We stayed there, we were processed or whatever it was. They took our identity book and took... I used to shave with an open razor and they took that from me and gave me a safety razor. From there we went to Lingfield Racecourse.
How so far had people behaved toward you, these detectives and the police? Had they behaved in a friendly or an...
As far as I'm concerned, they couldn't have been... In fact, they're almost apologetic. We've got to do it now, which is quite right. I mean, I have no... I can't say I was treated bad. I mean, after all, this detective said, come on, won't you, let's go. And instead of that, he said, go on, have your breakfast, I'll be back in half an hour. You can't be more reasonable than that. So far... I mean, I was treated fine. Got to Lingfield Racecourse. We didn't have much to do with the soldiers. The barbed wires around. We saw them marching up and down. I don't think I spoke two words to any of them.
How long after your arrest was this? Just a few days?
Where's this? Lingfield. Lingfield was all... You can almost say it was the same day because I was arrested... Well, say 8 o'clock in the morning. By the afternoon, I was in Brompton Oratory, and from then to Lingfield. So more or less, it's the same day. It's possible that I could have slept on the floor, Brompton Oratory, but I don't remember. I think they whipped us off to Lingfield straight away. Then from Lingfield, I can't recall how many days later, but maybe a week later. They put us on the train and took us to Worth Mills, Bury. Now, that was a horrible place. There was grease on the floor and the toilet facilities were bad. The food was meagre. But all in all, the weather was fine. We had freedom of movement. We roamed around in the inside the barbed wire, and in fact, we even used the roofs were broken, and we used to climb up and sunbathe on the roof of the mill.
What about the people who were in charge at Bury?
They were soldiers?
The camp commandant and so on.
Well, the British.
Yes.
So I don't think I had anything to do with them. There was no ill treatment. I don't think I can't even remember talking to a soldier there. I mean, we were inside, they were outside. We walked around and amused ourselves the best we could. We played cards, draughts, and we had the occasional game of football. And that was it. And then on
the physical conditions,
poor.
The cleanliness and so on.
Oh, no, very bad. No, very bad, I think. The physical condition, they were very bad. It was dirty. The palliasses were grubby. The blankets were they were grubby too. But I mean, we didn't. I didn't complain. I mean, that was it. We're in the war, and I mean, physically we weren't badly treated, and the conditions. Well, the conditions were horrible.
Was there any vermin there?
I didn't see any. I wouldn't say there wasn't any. I mean, I can only speak as I find. There could have been vermin there, but I didn't see any.
Did you have enough to eat?
Sufficient. It wasn't in abundance, but we weren't starved. There was. It was. In fact, I can't even remember. I can't even remember one solitary meal. Other than maybe corned beef. I remember eating corned beef. Probably, I don't know, probably the food didn't worry me at the time. I was maybe more preoccupied with my condition. I don't know.
How many of the people there did you know?
Strangely enough, there are very few. Most of my friends had seemed to have gone on to the Isle of Man. There were a few that I knew. There was a cousin who went down... The Arandora, Rafael Pesquitza, he was there, and I knew San Pietro, who was a survivor, and who else did I know there? Gonzaga. There was the Gonzaga brothers that I knew. One came on the ship, and he lost his life, and strangely enough, I with the elder Gonzaga, I think it was Luigi, yeah, same name as me. I was very friendly with him, and when we were going, he said, "Louis, look after my young brother. He was only 16, the younger one," and I said, "I will." And I couldn't look. I didn't even see him on the boat on the Arandora. I suppose it's stupid, but to me, I still feel a little bit. In fact, when I came back to England, I didn't even go to see him. He said, "Look after my," but I didn't even see him on the ship. And there was another one. There was another cousin, another Beskitsa, sister Beskitsa. He survived too. And then, of course, there was Peter. I knew Peter. I knew him. I wasn't all that friendly with him. And there was another chap there, Andrea Pini. God rest his soul. He finished up. He was my best pal. and I knew him. I suppose, in fact, though, when you think of it, there were so many people there that in the few days that we were there, we probably didn't even meet everybody.
So you said then you were taken to the Isle of Man?
No. What happened then was that on the 30th of June 1940, names were being called out, and I remember I was up on the roof sunbathing, and they were calling away, and I said, I'm not going, I'm not going. And at the last minute, I decided to go. I said, oh, I might as well. None of my close friends there. I didn't have one close friend in Bury. I had acquaintances, but I said, well, they're on the Isle of Man. The sooner I go, the quicker I'll be with them. So I came down, and then we were taken to Liverpool on the Arandora Star. I was put in a cabin. There were four of us, There were four bunks. Anyway, I was one of the first in there. I put my suitcase on the bunk. Then another one came in, and then finished. I was the youngest, and there were four older men. So we had a palias. We'd been given a palias in the meantime, and I think the blankets were on the bunks. Anyway, when this older man came along, I mean, I don't know, 21, a man of 40's old, and I was always brought up to defer to my elders, which is no bad thing. So I said, you have the bunk and I'll sleep on the floor, which incidentally I think saved my life. So they settled down for them, and soon they were asleep. I was on the floor, I couldn't sleep. Then they start to snore, and so I've got my palias and the suitcase, and I dragged it up further up an upper deck. And I'm looking at all the everybody littered around the decks with people lying down and sleeping. And I went on, there was a chap there. And I said to him, oh, do you mind if I put my... Oh, no, son, he said, sit down there. And I did, I stayed there, and I was a little bit seasick, and I got talking to him. He said, I've got a son as old as you, you know, and Galante, that's his name, Galante. God rest his soul, too. And I said, well, I could do with a cigarette. He said, yeah, son, he gave me a cigarette. And all in all, he looked after me. Made sure that I was comfortable. As I say, I was a little bit seasick. On the morning of the 2nd, I woke up. I had a suit on that I'd paid 8 guineas for only 2 or 3 weeks previously. And I had a waistcoat, and I had a gold hunter with a gold watch and chain and a pound piece. That was what my father had given me for the 21st. Anyway, I opened the gold hunt, had a look, it was 6:30. I put my head down. I don't know whether I slept again, but all of a sudden, I heard a... So, got up. What's happened? And there's Galante next to me. He said, I've got up, and I had my overcoat as well there, which I was using. I had my overcoat and a life jacket. I put the life jacket down, the overcoat on top, and I was using that as a pillow. So I picked up the overcoat and started to go. He said, where are you going? So I said, I'm going on deck. I said, we've hit an iceberg. So he said, we haven't hit an iceberg. He said, we've been torpedoed. I said, no. I said, anyway. So he said, take your life jacket. And he said, please. Well, believe me or not, I took that life jacket because he'd been so nice to me and I didn't want to offend him. So I picked the life jacket up and I was carrying it. And as I was going out, I saw a chap who I knew, he wasn't a friend, and he said, he put his life jacket on, and he said, Lou, he said, give me a hand to tie up the back. So I said, all right, so I tied it up. And I said, he said, what about you? He said, do you want to put it on? Now, believe me, at the moment, at that time, I wasn't particularly worried, because the night before, there had been a ship coming along. I said, well, you know, they'll take us off shortly. Very naive, but there I was only 21, 22 then. And so I put the life jacket on. Then there was crowds all over the place and the hubbub. Now, in the papers the following day, it said there was panic. Believe me, where I was, there was no panic. Confusion, plenty. Bewilderment, loads of it. People looking at each other. What are we going to do? Nobody knew what was it. So I said, let's get out of this crowd. So I went up another deck. When I got this deck, there's San Pietro there. He's craning his head down. He said, oh, you silly, just straighten up that boat, because they were lowering the boat. So anyway, I said, what are you doing, Sam? Oh, he said, those silly bastards. He said, they can't lower the boat. Anyway, the boat came level the deck. And he said, jump in, Skits. Biscuits are skits, you know. So I said, no, I said, I'm not going to get my feet wet. I said, we'll be taking off in a minute. Still under the impression that there's a ship going to take us off. So I wandered up on the top deck. Got to the top deck, and there was some of the lads, the Italians, pushing out some rafts. They said, give us a hand. So I'm getting these and begin to throw them, I'm throwing them overboard. Now I'm beginning to get a little bit worried. And I said, right, next decent raft that comes my way, I'm going to throw it overboard and I'm going to jump in after it.
Could you swim?
Yep. I could swim. And I didn't get the chance. All of a sudden, I heard the three toots. Afterward, people told me that was meant abandoned ship, but I didn't know at the time. But I knew it was time to abandon because the ship started to go that way. I started to run down to jump in. I know I lost my footing. Now I remember. I remember putting my hand out. I remember no more. Next thing, I find myself, I come to the shock of my hitting the water must have revived me. By now I felt myself going down. That's it, you've gone down with your ship, that's your lot. So I said a little prayer. I thought of my family, and I feel like I gave my soul up to God. Believe me, I was still not scared. Not yet, that came later. Anyway, there I heard of two terrific sort of explosion. They told me after it's probably the boilers exploded. I thought the boilers had exploded. Next thing, I felt myself going up. Eventually, I reached the surface. There were dead bodies all around me. There was debris around, and I don't know how. But anyway, finally, I got clear. I got clear, I was pretty weak. Nearby, I saw a man with his head split open. In fact, he was flapping just like a leaf of a book. And he was shouting out, aiuto, aiuto, help. And I felt, how can I help? I can't even help myself. Anyway, after the water, because there was a great movement of water after having come up to the surface, I saw a couple of mail bags. Now, I had my life jacket on. I could swim, but I didn't feel I had any strength at all. What I did, I got these mail bags, under one arm, one each, and I rested there. I rested until finally the mailbags got sodden and they sunk. But by now I had got some strength back, and I was looking around and I saw a piece of wood floating around, and I hung on to that. For how long, I don't know, because you can't tell time. I know it was quite a while. Near distance, say, I saw a raft there with two men on it. And one had a sort of bandana around his head. And in fact, it struck me as funny. He looked like a pirate. You know, the Spanish Main and all that. And I even managed to laugh. And I called out and said, "Have you any room there?" He said, "Yes." He said, "Swim over. Come over." And yeah, I've got this piece of wood hanging on. And I started to swim. I couldn't make it. And I'm treading water. No way. So the Marzolini, his name was, he said, "Stay there," he said, "I'll try and manoeuvre the raft round." And he had a piece of wood, and he slowly manoeuvred the raft round. And when he got to me, I finished up belly first on the raft. And I must have stayed like that for half an hour at least.
You were exhausted.
Oh, absolutely. I was absolutely exhausted. Absolute. And then after I tried to get on, and there's the other chap, Radice. "Oh," he said, "for God's sake," he said, "you'll tip us over." He said, "I can't swim." So I had to stay there, and I stayed there. I don't know, but eventually, with their help, pulling me up by the arms, and I finally managed to get on the raft. And we sat back to back. More or less, we were resting on each other.
How big was this raft?
The raft, our legs were in the water all the time. I should say if it was 1 yard by 1 yard, maybe a little bit bigger, I can only guess. I suppose it could have been, in fact, I don't think it was a raft, I think it was the top of a table. So, and it was pretty square, but we did, we sat back to back.
How big were the waves?
Not very, they were quite calm. Now, when I really got frightened was before I got on the raft, is there was a swell, a fairly big swell, but not really rough. And as the swell went up, you were in the dip. You were absolutely alone. You saw nothing. But then when the waves dipped again, then you saw dotted around. You saw people on rafts. You saw the lifeboats. But that's when I was scared. That was really when I got scared. And
when you realised there were so many, you mean?
No, when I realised that what a predicament I was in. You know, the scary part was, I suppose, it could be illogical if you like,